Just ahead, KHSU presents a special locally produced program about guns, gun violence, and our nation's schools. School safety, are guns the answer? A panel of guests will take on this pressing national issue. This program begins right now.
Thank you. Well, interesting song to start with. We could have done I Don't Like Mondays,
yeah,
which
was
the first one that I remember that being there. Anyways, tonight's topic, as stated, is going to be we're going to sort of cover a little bit of a spectrum. We're going to try to do a lot in an hour. I've got four guests with me, but we are going to talk about school safety, I think, is essentially the primary topic. Everybody knows what's in the news. I don't think I need to renew that. And without going into too much detail, we'll get into the discussion. But I'm going to introduce my guests. I've got across from me, Officer Victoria Marr. She's been our officer with the Arcata Police for 5 years. For the past year, she has been a school resource officer. Thank you for being with us, Victoria.
Thank you.
And then we also have Roger McDonald, superintendent of Northern Humboldt Union High School District. He's been at this in education for 22 years. I don't think you've been a superintendent that long, right? But a high school teacher, middle, and high school principal, and at McKinleyville High School. So a lot of local history there. And married to a teacher, right?
To a fabulous educator.
And Ginny Wozny, did I say that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Perfect.
Wozny, English language arts teacher at the Academy of the Redwoods. Grew up and spent most of your life in Southern California, but came to HSU to get a bachelor's degree almost 20 years ago, not quite, just shy of it, and fell in love with Humboldt County and has been here ever since. And you did your teaching at Fortuna Union High, so you've been around locally.
I'm actually, Academy of the Redwoods is part of the Fortuna Union High School District,
oh,
so
it?
I'm still with the same district. But,
okay, interesting. Yeah. The district, broad district, the sunset never sets on the Fortuna District, sounds like. And then on the telephone, we have Tom Parker, currently Police and Fire Commissioner for Santa Barbara, former Operations Command Level FBI agent, and actually former FBI hostage negotiator, knows something about guns. Are you with us?
I sure am, Eric. It's a real pleasure to be with you. And let me apologize up front. I was just in your fair city last week and brought back one heck of a cold with me, so my voice may be a little off base here.
Well, we should apologize then. Anyways, all right. So why don't we start? Everybody knows what's in the news. We've seen the walkouts, and why don't we kind of start with what do we mean by school safety? I mean, it seems like the chances of this, even though it hits the news, it's pretty rare, right? That a mass shooter comes onto campus. But we do have more common incidences of students with grudges or who are afraid coming on with not just guns, but even other weapons. What can we say about school safety locally? I think we've done pretty well locally, haven't we? Maybe we'll start with you, Roger.
Yeah, I think so. I think that we're a very responsive community. I think Humboldt County, these are rural schools, small schools, very, entwined in our community, work hard to, maintain not just the physical safety of our kids, but the social, emotional safety of them. Up here in Humboldt, we have lots of kids that have gone through a lot of trauma. And our staff and our administration and our students, really work hard to make sure that all of our kids feel that they're part of our schools and that there's a reason to come to school every day.
And Victoria, you've been involved on campus. You obviously deal with some of these issues. We talked a little bit before about how this is a multifaceted issue. There's a lot of debate about guns, proposal that teachers be armed to make us feel safer. But there's also issues of the kids themselves, of them feeling safe, of them being supported. What can you say about that in your experience?
I think creating a good relationship with the school's administrators and teachers so they feel comfortable coming to me with any concerns they might have with students, and then creating a good environment in which I can talk with them, the students and the teachers, to address those issues and see what we can do to mitigate anything or counsel the students if need be, has been my goal as the school resource officer.
Are there signs that you look for? Not, and we're talking about an extreme thing with somebody coming on and shooting a lot of people again. But there are a lot. There's a lot in between that. Are there experiences you can, you know, without talking about specific students, but obviously experiences that maybe some of what you're hearing on the media resonates with you?
Sure, you get students that may have some issues at home where, so we talk about when we know something has come up in the home life of some kind of trauma, whether it be some kind of domestic violence or other things like that, in which we know it might affect a student's actions at school as well, whether it's they can't focus in class or they're having troubles with other students. And we, again, will bring them in, whether most likely I won't. It would be a counselor that would discuss it with them. And then if those concerns raise further, then they would bring it to me.
Right. And Ginny, I'm going to ask you, because you're a teacher. Of course, you're not the only teacher in the panel or former teacher. But one of the things we hear about is how teachers are asked to be everything, not just teachers. You're asked to be social workers, counselers, everything. And now, apparently, some people want you to be a security guard. But there's, you know, ways that you, things that you look for as well in your positions that you've held. And obviously it starts way early if you're going to try to head off the extreme situations. But what can you say about your experience as it relates to these issues?
I think Roger and Victoria both spoke to things that are really important, especially that we create a safe environment, that there are strong relationships between staff and students. A student, just like any other human being, really craves someone who sees them as a human, as an individual. And we can create that for all of our students. Social emotional learning is a skill. It's something that we as teachers can teach. And I think the trauma that affects a lot of our students is drastic in this county. And that's something that we all know. And we talk to each other as staff, as administrators, about things that are going on with individual students. And that's important, because if they feel like there's someone that cares about them at school, whether it's someone who works in the cafeteria or the resource officer or the principal, that really makes a huge difference in a student's life and can prevent them from not just something like a school shooting, but from harming themselves as well.
Yeah. Tom, I'm going to bring you into this. Of course, you know, we've got you in two capacities. One as a former FBI person, maybe with some knowledge of guns, but you're also a police commissioner in Santa Barbara, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And have you been involved in interfacing with schools about safety on campus?
Yes, there's been quite a bit of involvement. And, of course, because of the recent incidents that have happened here in the last couple of months, there's even been more interest in it. And I think we're fortunate here in that the school districts have really spent a lot of time on putting together emergency plans and having exercises and drills and really preparing themselves in the event something like this would happen. And I think the important thing to remember, and I listening to the conversation that has just occurred here, certainly the support for students and letting them feel like someone cares and that they're involved and they're not just kind of on the outside of everything that's happening is very important. But I think at the same time, as we have seen just recently, gun violence and shootings like we've just had, these horrible situations can happen at any school at any time. And I think that really needs to be kept in the forefront of everybody's attention. I would like to add a couple of things to what Victoria and Ginny mentioned, if I could.
Sure.
There are some very observable indicators of a student who could be a potential shooter. And there, these are things that seem to show up time and time again in the backgrounds of these kids after a shooting incident. Usually there's evidence of cruelty to animals. There's abrupt personality changes where someone who may have been very outgoing suddenly becomes very quiet and a loner. Also students that have just explosive anger management issues, and sometimes they'll engage in bullying or have been the subject of bullying. And probably the most observable things are their fixation on violent video games and movies and obsession with weapons. And I think that's surfaced in the last couple of cases with the information that has been developed so far.
Let me ask about that, though, because I was actually a very quiet kid. I was also bullied intensely, probably until I was in about the eighth grade. And I really feel that, you know, it was a very hard time for me, but I don't think I ever would have picked up a gun. I don't think that was ever something that was going to happen to me. But I did act up in other ways. And, you know, so I'm wondering if we are so focused on the extreme actions, maybe, you know, we look at the other actions too. I mean, it's also bad if they just go beat another kid up because they're angry about it. That's not going to be in national news, but that's a problem all over and is a campus safety issue. Roger, wanted to...
I was going to say, one of the things is, in addition to the fact that we all want to take care of kids and make sure they feel good at school, we've formalized some of this work. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the work that we do to, you know, mentor and support students day to day, we also have a team that meets every week at each of our high schools, and we have staff that are trained to pick up the same observable behaviors that you just spoke about. And it happens all the time where we'll hear of a student that is displaying, you know, a fascination with guns or a, you know, acting violent or talking about hurting themselves or others or, you know, some of the other stuff. And right. We'll either sometimes we'll go as far as having a threat assessment team get together. And oftentimes it's just, you know, the team, the student assistance team talking about that student and maybe doing a referral to get some help for them. You know, it's the whole scale every day. It's mm-hmm. that kid that's just lonely and doesn't have someone to talk to. And then it's all the way up through someone that's doing some, you know, bullying behavior that we can work with. Right. To the people that we're super, super nervous about. And when that happens, we do contact our allies and law enforcement and our other resources to look into that.
I think this is Jenny. You asked about teachers being asked to do everything, which is right. true. And we could have a whole other show about that.
Yes.
But I think one of the things I don't like about the idea of me being armed as a teacher is not just that you're asking me to do something else, but there are people like Victoria, who it takes years for them to right. be trained. It's not okay. I wouldn't expect that Victoria could come into my classroom and teach my English class. And I would assume that...
Definitely not.
Well, I could help. And I would assume that she wouldn't want me to be armed on a campus.
That is the proposal on the table, is to arm teachers randomly, maybe give them a little extra money to train and have it. So why don't we actually have each of you kind of address that? Is this something that's going to add to the safety of a school? And I guess in some situations, it, you know, you could say it might if in the right circumstances, but also I could see if I'm a law enforcement and entering a building and I'm hearing gunshots, I don't know who's who, right, necessarily. So maybe Victoria, I'll let you address that.
Sure. So the Arcata Police Department, we don't have a stand one way or the other. We're going to enforce whatever the law is at right now. The law says the teachers are not armed. Me personally, I agree that I have concerns with teachers being armed. Having, as Jenny said, law enforcement officers, we get a lot of training and continuously training in situations where any kind of situation. So we gain that experience as we go through our careers, and where teachers won't necessarily have that experience. And if something were to happen, that first time they're going to have that experience is going to be an extremely high stress environment, and you never know what you're going to do in that kind of situation. So I definitely have my concerns over teachers being armed.
Tom, did you want to talk a little bit about that proposal?
Yeah, you bet. First of all, I think it's a horrible proposal for a variety of reasons, and we could go on for a couple of hours on what those reasons are. But I think the most important thing is, and Victoria has really just touched on it, law enforcement officers, whether they're municipal police officers or FBI agents, over the course of a career, and especially in their training, they receive hundreds of hours of training in firearms. And it's not just standing there shooting at targets, which is a very artificial situation, much, much different from a real-life armed confrontation with somebody who is armed and is apparently willing to shoot that officer. Included in that training are a lot of shoot-don't-shoot situations where the officers are really put into stressful situations where they have to make a split-second decision as to whether to shoot or not to shoot. And those tend to be very, very repetitive-type training sessions in most law enforcement agencies. And the talk that I've heard about arming teachers is that it would be okay if they're provided training. Well, there's no way that teachers are going to get that level and that amount of training and get to the point where a shoot-don't-shoot situation becomes, quite frankly, instinctive. You don't even have to think about it. And the thing that concerns me is if a teacher has a gun in a classroom, the first thing that happens in the event of a situation is I would think that they are going to feel there's an expectation that they are to do something because they have that gun. Well, that takes the attention away from their students and away from their classroom, which I think is their first responsibility. Now, my wife is a retired school teacher, and we've had numerous conversations about this. And the point is, you know, the teacher is responsible for those students. That's her first priority, not trying to chase an armed individual down the hallway, but to protect those students, to try and close off the classroom, and really not be concerned about grabbing that gun and trying to go out and take out an armed individual. It just doesn't make any sense, and unfortunately, it's become more of a political situation than a practical one. I know Arcata is an area where there's a lot of hunting, and I would think a lot of families have firearms or have access to firearms, so it's an issue that is certainly a major concern for up there. But I just don't think that the answer is in bringing guns into the classrooms. It just creates more problems than I think it's going to prevent.
Let me put forth an argument that's been made, is that if a potential shooter knows that there are teachers and doesn't know which teacher it is, that maybe it'll deter the whole thing to begin with, and so that the shooting wouldn't even be necessary. Do you think there's a deterrence value to this?
There's an easy answer to that. I think most shooters in these situations, it's clear that they do a fair amount of planning. You know, they take time to buy the weapons they're going to use, to choose the weapons they're going to use. Usually they're familiar with the school layout and the school grounds. And what's going to happen is if they know that there are some teachers, if not all, that have weapons in the classroom, they're going to plan accordingly. Mm-hmm. And it's going to, you know, cause them to make some changes in how they launch their assault on the school. And I think it's just going to, like I said a minute ago, I think it's going to create more problems than it's going to prevent. And to me, prevention is the key here. There has to be planning and drills and what have you to deal with these situations before they happen.
And some of them kind of go on in suicide missions anyways, right?
Yeah. There are some that do that, yeah.
And it's, you know, you hit on so many good points there. You know, that last point you're making about if that became the norm that schools were more heavily armed, then shooters would be more heavily armed. Or if, you know, we lock the schools off, well, then, you know, unfortunately, then you might find that someone in that position might choose to shoot kids getting off of the school bus or something like that. So I don't mean to suggest, you know, ways for someone to go out and wreak havoc. I'm just saying that that you're not going to get foolproof, Loctite, airport-style security. and our teachers, and I have some dear friends that are teachers that have concealed carry that are trained, that I think are some of the most thoughtful and responsible people that I know. But even in conversations with them, you know, they know that they're busy, that they're not paying attention 100% of the time like Victoria is. They're working, they're teaching, they're taking a knee, they're helping somebody figure out their homework, they're carrying, you know, snacks to the snack bar when they have their club has a fundraiser. I mean, they're doing stuff. And so it's they wouldn't have the same expectation as an armed police officer would to be providing that security. So it's not even a good comparison beyond the fact that the training's not there. And you do bring up a good point that, you know, Humboldt County is it's a sportsman's paradise. And this issue for me is not about whether guns are good or bad. It's just the appropriateness of whether or not our teachers should be armed.
And you raised a very good point a minute ago that the teachers in the classroom have just numerous responsibilities. They're constantly dealing with their students. And these shooters usually know that. And the big thing is when a shooter comes into a school, he or she has got one big thing on their side, and that's the element of surprise. And if they come into a classroom or they come into a school, the teacher or the administrators are really going to be taken by surprise. You know, it's the same situation as a first responding police officer to an incident. They don't know what they're walking into, and a lot of police officers are shot and killed because they were surprised. They didn't know what they were facing, and they walked into something that that took them by surprise, and ultimately they paid the ultimate sacrifice. But in a classroom, they definitely are going to have that element of surprise, and that puts the teacher at a great disadvantage.
Well, let me ask. Okay, so maybe it doesn't work for the mass shooter, the one who's just coming in to just shoot people at random. But probably the more common gun injuries and deaths on schools have to do with students with grudges against each other, maybe gang related or something. Do you think, you know, or just, you know, whatever, would it be more effective to deter them to have armed teachers? And I'm just putting that out there because these are arguments I've heard over the past week. So.
Well, I think the situation that just happened in Maryland, where the student was on campus, he had a gun. He'd obviously had a falling out or had been jilted by a girl he was interested in, and he shot her and shot another student. And, you know, that was not a mass shooting. Who knows what it could have turned into if that school resource officer had not been right there and able to neutralize him. A lot of shootings are that way. But you know, the big ones that we hear about are certainly these mass shootings that's happened down in Florida.
Yeah, and sorry for taking maybe your time as we move around the room here, but this morning, I was at a training for multi-tiered systems of support this morning with teachers and administrators from both of our schools, and I got up, went for a walk, and then I come back and flick on the news, and there's another school shooting, you know, as I'm looking at that and thinking about that, how did I just lose my train of thought? It's remarkable. But that, shoot, I'm going to have to take a pass.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to take over for superintendent.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
As you're talking about prevention and you're talking about the different kinds of shootings, I think one of the things we can do besides have relationships and support for students is be trained. And one of the things that I know we do well in Humboldt County is we are preparing for this, and we do talk about safety. We talk about training for active shooters. And in the recent shooting in Florida, I know that was one thing that did help save a lot of lives, is that they had a very active, I think, dean who had just had an active mm-hmm. shooter drill the day before. Mm-hmm. So those students knew what to do, the teachers knew what to do, and that can save lives. And it's unfortunate. As a teacher, that's not something I wanted to ever to have to learn how to do, but I know the reality of the situation, and that can help. And we need to understand that that's something we can do in the classroom and as a school.
And that's where I was going, was just how grateful I was that they had the SRO there, and that just, you know, to limit that. There's a new you know, with increased shooting, there's a new round of heightened attention on training. I know that in our school district, we've been working with the sheriff and the APD and Arcata Fire to look over our protocols and to do some refinement improvement. And also the County Office of Education is putting some trainings out there, too, to sort of get us, you know, refined and with more current practice. But certainly we do need to get not only our teachers more consistently trained on this and our kids, but even our parents, our community members. I think that one thing, as I was looking at the news this morning, was thinking about all those families mm-hmm. and not knowing what's going on and just really, you know, and increasing our communication with them to let them know what our protocols are so they know what to expect.
Especially in a rural county yep. like Humboldt, it's the communication is key in an emergency situation like that.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go back to the point of the most recent the shooting in Maryland and as well as the one in Florida and your point of whether if there's guns on campus, if it would deter students from doing it. Both of those instances, school resource officers were on campus with guns and that didn't prevent or right. the shootings from happening. So
I think it's safe to say that somebody in that frame of mind isn't thinking for their own safety either, right?
You exactly. know,
so deterrence maybe doesn't even apply to some of them because.
Well, and there was the incident, I believe, in Georgia where the secretary or an administrative clerk was able to empathize and talk to the shooter and talk the shooter down. Not that I would recommend doing that. That's right. obviously Victoria's nodding no. but that's something that was a deterrent. Mm-hmm. That person didn't have a gun. They were able to handle it because of their relationship with that shooter.
Victoria, let me ask you, because you probably deal with, you know, students just threatening each other every once in a while, right? And,
sure.
And a lot of times they're not serious. Other times maybe they are, but not of serious violence. But, and one of the problems with dealing with students is there is kind of a code of silence. You know, one of the things I remembered is, as badly as I was being bullied, I didn't tattle because that would make it worse mm-hmm. and the rest. I mean, how do you get around that?
I think it's, again, going back to creating the relationships with the students, as law enforcement or the teachers and the administrators, of creating those relationships that they feel safe coming to talk about what's going on with them and letting the people that are, excuse me, doing the bullying know that there's no tolerance for it. And if it comes forward that you're bullying to begin with, or if once it's brought up that it continues, that there will be consequences for it, and just making sure that there's that safe environment.
That is a huge piece, you know, that culture of respect and of trust, you know, that people, that whether it's students can come talk to a trusted teacher and then that teacher can feel like they can trust us to deal responsibly with that. And that's a big piece. I think we all do a really good job with that, but it's always on the back of my mind too, you know, that how are we making sure that our kids know that that you know, snitches get stitches culture can, you know, can fade.
And some of it is the teachers observing what's going on, and they can see the relationships with the students, and if they're able to stand up for the student themselves or other students as well, but the teacher's making that step rather than having to make the student make the step, so they're not feeling fearful that mm-hmm. they're coming forward.
As an English teacher, I often get the kind of stories. People tell me things through writing or through expressing themselves through language arts that other teachers don't have the opportunity to do, and they trust me with that, and that is something that you can see and you can talk to students about, as opposed to letting it fester.
Or in their writing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
I was a substitute teacher in San Francisco, and I remember having an assignment one time where I asked them to write stories. I can't remember exactly what the assignment was, but one girl, about 14 years old, a really nice girl, wrote an essay about hanging her father from, you know, in a parking lot somewhere, you know, hanging him and the rest. And I brought that to the counselor, you know, and I know that they took her out of it. And I think it was just her really dark sense of humor, but you know, how do you know, and how do you discern between that?
Well, it's the relationship. It goes back to that relationship, and students trust me to know that what they're saying, I'm a mandated reporter, first of all, mm-hmm. and I make that very clear. And that anything they write about that talks about themselves hurting themselves or someone else is something that I have no choice. Mm-hmm. I have to report that. They also know that if they're writing a fictional piece about hanging their father, that's something I might talk to them about. And if I know that, you know, their father is someone they don't like and have a horrible relationship, I would much rather they write a short story about hanging their father than hurting themselves or someone else. I would still talk to them about it.
Yeah, I mean, my concern was that it was an indication of abuse from the father, but you know, I didn't know that, though. I didn't want to make accusations, so I brought it to the school counselor and figured they were better equipped to deal with it. But that's, but you know, that it really
that's the right thing to do when you see something. Yeah, that's exactly what you do.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, I think this is touching on a real important consideration. There's this code of silence among kids, especially as they get up into their preteen and teen years. And I know a lot of the school shooting situations that I've become familiar with over the years. Kids usually know when a student is or one of their friends is leaning towards doing something like this, and in a high percentage of these situations, the shooters have told a friend or an acquaintance what they're planning, and we've seen that in the last couple of situations too. I don't know what the answer to that is, other than perhaps, you know, working with the parents and really encouraging the kids to have the trust in their parents and in their teachers to come forward when they see something like this or are told something by a fellow student as to what they're planning. And I think that would go a long way to be able to break down that code of silence that a lot of kids do have.
One thing that I have a lot of optimism and faith in our county is I know in our two high schools, Arcata and McKinleyville High, and I know faculty at Fortuna and Eureka that do the same, that kids have a tremendous amount of leadership now that they haven't had in the past, whether it's student leadership or whether it's their relationship with administration and teachers or just the student groups. Like I know that we have a Sources of Strength program in our high schools where, you know, for having kids help each other with their self-esteem and particularly suicide prevention. And we have mentoring programs for kids, by kids, you know, as we bring the eighth graders into the school, and I know you do the same thing, is that as we continue to give those kids that voice and that responsibility, you know, that'll help maybe with, you know, make that connection to, you know, getting that information to us.
Yeah, they really begin to feel, because their sense of ownership mm-hmm. of school and of what happens there, their sense of pride rests on you know, having those relationships with their peers. And they will come and say to me, I'm concerned, this is what's happening. And they really are the best source.
Well, I'm really appreciative of the kids in the school. No matter what your position on gun control is, one thing the kids from that school have done is they've kept this discussion alive. They're not letting it die.
They're not.
I mean, they are just, you know, are going. And I think everybody, regardless of what position they take, you know, because the kids definitely have some strong opinions about what they consider to be solutions. But just keeping the discussion alive and not letting it go, it's pretty amazing. I don't think I've ever seen it quite go this long before.
Well, they were empowered and you know, a shout out to those teachers. They talk a lot about their AP history teacher, their journalism teacher, who helped them to learn to come to the table with their facts, to be able to back up what they're saying with sources, to speak. I'm very impressed with the way that they treat people that they feel are their opponents with respect and dignity as well. And that's really an important piece of that.
The superintendent kind of gave us all a warning the very day after the incident happened. He said, you know, I've been talking to a lot of kids. I don't think they're going to let this discussion die. And he was right. Tom, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've come across some articles just in the last few days over the student walkout that occurred across the country here just a few days ago, where the kids were protesting the lack of gun controls and calling for action by the legislators and what have you. But there's been a number of schools and a number of teachers that have, you know, threatened these kids with detention. I read today of a student who was given an F on a pop quiz that the teacher suddenly decided to hold in the middle of the walkout period time. And those types of things certainly don't accomplish the things we're talking about here that really need to be done to encourage kids to be willing to speak up, to be willing to take action if they see something that's not right. And as the kids in Florida have been doing, and certainly providing tremendous leadership examples for kids across the country, they're speaking out, they're taking action. And if our legislators, unfortunately, will not do it.
And they've responded to personal attacks really gracefully. Yeah. I mean, kid who, when Alex Jones, who isn't a paragon of calm discussion, said something about their paid actors, and the one kid said, anybody who saw my performance in Fiddler on the Roof knows that nobody's going to pay me to act. You know,
so. I would say there's a little nuance to this discussion about the kids. I mean, kids were great. Like, Maddie, who was one of the real early adopters of, at least in our district, of this walkout, emailed me, wanted to talk. We sat down, and we talked about to be organized. She wanted to be respectful and say, "Hey, we're doing this. Want to let you know." She wasn't asking for permission. She just wanted to, this is what we're doing. And so, you know, she met with her principal as well as did the kids at McKinleyville and Six Rivers, and they sort of, you know, talked about what was going to happen. And one of the things for me early on though was, you know, as we celebrate all of our civil rights activists who faced water cannons and dogs and bats and jail for their protest, that, you know, just because most of us very much agreed with the kids and sympathized with them, you can't necessarily just give them a free pass because you like what they're doing.
No.
So that the next time when the group that doesn't like what you're doing, you do give them consequences.
Right.
So just a little nuance on the consequences. I don't think it's appropriate to go overboard and give them anything extra. But, you know, if you just whittle it down to what they do, they were tardy to class or they left a little bit early, the consequence for that isn't going to be super, super high.
The consequences that they calculated.
It should be, you know, and I know that the schools are, you know, working with that. And we've had, you know, I've had several conversations with people about that. And in the end, we usually get to the place where, that's a good point. That's where most people would probably end up. But the kids were great, though. They were at all of our schools across the county, were respectful, and they were organized. And not all the kids participated. There was a lot that didn't too, and they were good too. You know, it was, you know.
I think that's a very good point. You can't just open the door to, you know, to walkouts on every situation that comes along. I know I had the opportunity recently to be invited back to my high school after, oh my goodness, it's been 55 years, I guess, since I was here. And I spoke at a memorial service for a greatly beloved teacher and counselor. Well, back when I was a senior, we had a school district superintendent who unfortunately didn't last very long, but tried to fire this teacher and counselor when he was relatively new. And we ultimately held a student walkout to protest that. And the long and the short of the thing was, I don't know that we got all the credit for it, but his job was saved. And interestingly, he went on and became the principal of the high school. He became a member of the school board and ultimately became the school superintendent that built that particular district into one of the largest ones in California. This was down in Union City.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're probably familiar with that in Alameda County.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back and have an opportunity to not only talk about him, but to talk about the walkout, and especially to mention that here it's coming from a guy that went on and became an FBI agent, was quite rewarding for me. It was quite a feeling.
And as passionate as students are, they're teenagers.
Great.
And
Absolutely. As
I say, and if my students were here, they would groan as soon as I said this. Their frontal lobes are still developing. They don't always think of the consequences, and in order to really make their point and to have it be valid, they do need some repercussions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They need to know what sacrifice they're making and calculate that, factor that into their decision so that they learn that, you know, everything is about give and take in decision. Make it a learning experience, and I think that's what most schools did.
Yeah. And I also think it's probably fair to say, too, that I don't want to paint too rosy of a picture. I think it was rough on a lot of our campuses those next couple of days, too, because not everybody has the same opinion. And so that debate that's going across America, that's happening on our campuses, too. So there's definitely it's not like every student wants. So just, you know.
But that's not a bad
thing. And that's okay. You
discussion
know,
our, discussion of, exactly. an, of an issue that's relevant. It's better than getting into an argument over, a football game or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's important to have the open conversation. It's important for, us teachers and administrators to provide that forum for kids to have thoughtful debate themselves, too.
What we like to call a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As someone who lives outside of the area there, I would just like to kind of offer some congratulations to you folks. From what I'm hearing here, it sounds like, not only do you have a very understanding school administration there, but if what I'm hearing from Jenny, the teachers are also very, very committed to this empowerment of students to not only learn but to take leadership and to do what they can to prevent these things from happening. And that's really commendable.
Yeah. So why don't we just sort of, we've got in our last third segment, focus on, apparently the proposal of arming teachers is not popular with this group. So we'll move on from that. What do we do? We've sort of talked about it, but maybe in a little bit more systematic way. What do we do to make campuses overall safe and to prevent these things from happening? And we can't always do it. We can't guarantee that it's never going to happen, but we do seem to have it happen a lot more than it should happen. And so what can we do early on? And it's kind of relating it to other issues of general safety. I mean, it's not just about the mass shooters, but about making campuses safe in general.
I'm sorry to interrupt. If I could kind of tackle that, I have had the experience since retiring from the FBI, and I do a lot of security consulting over the years, and I've actually been retained by several schools and school districts around the country to come in and consult with them on that. And it's interesting to see, schools that have, or, and districts especially, that have had, very forward-thinking planning programs to address this. But it really comes down to something that's a kind of a protocol in law enforcement, too. If we approach a hostage situation or armed, barricaded subjects or whatever, there's basically three rings of security you look at. One is the outer perimeter, which is to control, innocent people from wandering into the scene or getting involved in it unintentionally, and also prevents the whoever the offender is from getting away. And that usually has to, in schools, that has to do with the grounds. And a lot of schools, unfortunately, around Los Angeles have gone to, totally fencing in the school grounds, the playgrounds, and what have you. The second thing is kind of a middle area of security, which really is, are the buildings. And down here in Southern California, most of the schools have open hallways, and, they're not inside buildings like they were in Parkland, Florida, where you have to go down a hallway to get to a classroom. But that's an area that really needs to be examined and hardened as a target. And of course, the inner core of this three concentric rings is the classroom, and things that certainly need to be done from a design or a redesign stage to prevent access to the classrooms. And there's been study after study on that, but I'd be real interested in Roger or Jenny's impressions of some of those ideas that have been floating around out there.
Yeah, I mean, well, you did a really nice job of summing up the practice and the issue for us. We look at a couple ways we look at our campus. One is annually we have our kids do a healthy kids survey, and then we also do a little survey, and they let us know where the unsafe places on campus are to sort of help us with that. But on like the more specific notion of how do you protect your school from random people walking in, it's pretty hard sometimes, you know, because there are lots of ways to get onto all of our campuses. You know, we do look at, you know, like fencing, where can we do a little bit more fencing? But the biggest thing, I think, is just trying to keep an eye on who's coming, you know, on our campuses, you know, and we're taking a second look at that, like, or another look at, you know, how can we best be aware of who is on campus, and making sure that we check in with the office and keep an eye on that. To be honest, they're pretty open, you know.
Yeah.
But what also is nice, to be honest, is our teachers and our staff are very perceptive. And if someone that doesn't belong on our campus walks on our campus, radios are buzzing, administrators are there. So that's, I mean, whether it's a teacher in a classroom looking out a window or a student, I mean, when there's someone that doesn't fit on our campus, we know about that pretty soon. As far as the classroom and the inner campus, you know, that's as when we know that there's an issue, that's, you know, that's the lockdown and the drills that, you know, that we do with that. And we're refining that as well so that we don't set up a situation where an alarm goes off and someone knows they can just sit there and it's a shooting gallery. So, you know, we're really practicing that to do a better job in that instance too, and teach our kids not only to, you know, to run and get into a lockdown situation, but to hide and if necessary, fight. We haven't always talked to our kids about that, but like you talk about the classroom is, you know, and I don't dig that I have a 9-year-old that sometime pretty soon is going to have to learn how to defend herself in her classroom with her buddies in case something happened. But, you know, that's where we are right now. So as we roll out for our staffs, our sort of refined safety plan, that's definitely part of it is how can we defend ourselves in that, 4 to 8 minutes, that initial span before law enforcement can get there to help us. We definitely do need to take a little more responsibility for our own security.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk, and I know some school districts around the country have been looking at controlling access not only to their administration building where they have to be buzzed in and be identified before they are buzzed in, but with the classrooms of putting the types of locks on mm-hmm. the doors that where they can't be opened from the outside. Mm-hmm. They can only be opened from the inside with the teacher's permission.
Peepholes.
Peepholes. There are different types of glass. Obviously, it gets into a big cost mm-hmm. issue at this point. I don't know, going to bulletproof glass is the answer, but I know there are films that can be put on windows that allow you to see through but prevent someone from taking a big hammer and battering out the glass in order to get access to the room, those types of things. But I do know an individual who has been an architect for schools for pretty much his whole career, and we had a real interesting discussion not long ago, and I think what came out of that was that I think we're going to start seeing design changes in the way schools are built, especially if these shootings continue, heaven forbid.
Jenny, you have some thoughts on that? Because yeah, we don't want to have it be like a bunker mentality. Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, that was not the point, and that isn't mm-hmm. where I was headed with it. But
right.
Things like this, putting up stronger doors that it just cannot be kicked in or whatever, and perhaps moving the windows instead of having windows in the classroom that come right down to counter level, you know, moving the windows up higher so that the sunlight still gets in. But just looking at these types of things, I mean, the airline industry fought for a long time about hardening the cockpits as targets, and they finally realized that putting in a much stronger door was one of the easy answers to it.
So
I don't think anybody's talking about turning it into a fortress, but there are design features that can be tweaked a little bit, I think, to harden the target.
And I would agree that there are certainly things. So, for instance, I remember early in my career having a lockdown drill and not being able to lock my door from the inside of a classroom. So there are practical ideas that we need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that environment trumps a mm-hmm. lot of things. And to have our schools look more like prisons, to me, is the wrong way to go. And I know that that's not what you were saying.
No, not at all.
No. But I think we can work with some of those specifics, certainly, to make it a safer place in terms of going through drills, looking at safety plans, talking to the students. Our annual Healthy Kids Survey mm-hmm. gives us a lot of great data and information that is anonymous that we can look at as a county, we can look at as a district, and we can look at as individual schools. Talking to people like our resource officers who are watching, who are observing. I think the environment and the climate is more important than the environment at this point.
You know, another thing too, Jenny, is we, you know, we're all high school people sort of.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and one thing that I've that's filtering through my head too is I think of all the work that our elementary schools are doing and our middle schools are doing with PBIS, with mindfulness, that the effort that they're putting into our kids, you know, to train them to understand their own emotions and how to handle themselves when they're in conflict. I really, that gives me a lot of optimism as we're going forward, that as kids grow and as they, you know, as we see them, that they're going to be more prepared to deal with things too.
But let me ask about the drills, because this is one of the memories I have. The only drills I ever had as a kid were fire drills. But my mother has memory in the 1950s of the idea
attacks.
That you could survive a nuclear attack by getting under your desk and the rest. And of course, it wasn't survivable. And what it did was just instill fear in them. That they were there. Is there, I mean, what do drills look like that can be effective in this, and how do you do it? And I know there was like it seemed crazy to me, maybe not other people would be, but in Alaska they were drilling by, the guy was going off shooting guns in the classroom so they could get used, students could get used to the sound of the guns.
Yeah, we don't do that. I know that our local law enforcement does active shooter drills on our schools, like they did one at Arcata High School last summer, and they do that when there's nobody around.
Mm-hmm.
With our drills, we talk to our students about why we're doing them. And then we go through the drills, and then we debrief it with our staffs afterwards, and like in a faculty meeting. And kids are doing drills in the elementary school. And I know, you know, again, not to mention my daughter again, but she comes home and they had an intruder, right, and came knocking on the door that the classroom that they were in, and she's like, she felt good, she felt safe.
But I remember even in the third grade, going through the drills where you all lined up and then walked out of the classroom. And I remember at 9 years old thinking, this isn't how it's going to work.
Well, it depends on the drill.
Running out.
Yeah, the first right. So the first thing, it depends on what the situation is. If it's a fire, you know, our old thinking was, okay, fire alarm, everybody needs to march out. Well, now we realize, well, if there's a fire and there's no smoke, then wait for someone to go to the big horn and say, hey, it's a fire alarm. So we've sort of adjusted that one already. And if it's a lockdown, it means just that. If you can get to someplace safe, do it. Otherwise, get off campus.
Right.
You know, so the drills are more sort of specific. And then when we do have the drill where we march out to the field, that's, you know, we live in an area where we're not going to get a lot of help if there was a natural disaster. So we sort of also need to be prepared to keep our kids for a while.
Right.
And that's oftentimes what that one is if there was a tsunami or an earthquake or a fire or something. That's the and it wouldn't necessarily be as easy as it is during a controlled environment. And we plan for those contingencies too.
And that's part of the reason you have the drills is so
right.
that when it comes to the situation, you've gone through it in a controlled environment. So the high stress situation is not as chaotic.
And our first responders give us feedback afterwards. Like every time we do a drill, we'll get some,
and the communication
advice.
Is key as well. And I know that the communication for first responders, the intra communication is important as well. And having that as part of the drill has been integral to what we're learning about what we need to do to make things better. I'm in a unique situation because we're on the CR campus. So that's a whole other ball of wax.
I think this is really getting to the crux of the situation, which is the education and the training. You know, so many of these situations that have occurred, they are made worse when the students and the teachers, or if it's in a workplace situation, the employees don't know what to do. But if they have been through these drills, if they have had discussions in the classroom, if they know what to do when something happens, that's going to save lives. And that approach that you're describing, I think, is a perfect approach to making sure the kids are prepared.
And having the discussion, as Roger and Jenny were saying, of having law enforcement giving the feedback and knowing what schools are going to be doing in the different situations. If we know what they're going to be doing, we know what we're walking into, at least for what the school looks like when we get there.
Yeah, so, and you know, Victoria, you're exactly right, because the flip side of that coin is also critical. The school teachers and the students and the administrators need to know what the police are going to do. And obviously that's going to be, you know, subject to whatever the situation is and how they respond. But I know sometimes in classrooms, and we saw it in Florida, where teachers had kids hiding in the closet. But when the police started coming in, at first they didn't know who they were. They didn't know if they were right. the good guys or the bad mm-hmm. guys. So that cross-communication, as I think Jenny or maybe it was you, Victoria, pointed out, is critical.
Definitely.
And learning things. I mean, we have cell phones now, and every student has a cell phone. Mm-hmm. And parents find out quickly that something's going on, and then cell phones are going off. And, you know, talking to students about that and understanding that maybe, you know, you need to understand that you have to turn your cell phone off in a situation like that. I heard some of the students in Florida talking about that. But again, I think we're digressing, unfortunately, and going back to what's going to happen Great. When this happens. Right. And I'd prefer to talk about the prevention.
Sure.
And really what Roger was talking about in terms of, we use a lot of acronyms in education, so
sure.
I'll try and...
You want to iron that out for me?
Yeah.
Help the superintendent out again.
Social-emotional learning is really something that we're focusing on in education at all levels. Starting in grade school, and it is really palpable. It is something as a high school teacher I can see that is happening. Our students, not just in this area, but all over the country, are faced with trauma that we have never seen before. Whether it's because they don't have a roof over their heads, whatever it is, and that's something that maybe we can't ask teachers and administrators to do even more, but we can help empower the students yep. to understand and get the tools they need to help take care of themselves. And I think that's the prevention piece yeah. that's important.
And things like we both have programs on our campuses for students with, you know, mental health issues, you know?
Yeah.
And so we provide those resources. One of the things I think when the community's thinking, like, how can they help, or, if, you know, if, president wants to give out money for guns and stuff, is to help us get resources on our campuses to help our kids yeah. get some mental health services there, get some, maybe, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, get resources to the kids where they need it. And then for us as a community to not be afraid when we consider bringing services to our community yeah. that if in a community they want to increase mental health and social services, that it's not to bring homeless people there, but it's to make sure that the very same child that might end up shooting up the school would have the opportunity to get that service when he's younger.
Right, yeah. And funding is the key.
Yeah.
And funding is the key. And, you know, to treat the people who spend the largest amount of time with your children as professionals, and to fund schools so that they can provide those things for the kids is important. That's where the discussion, if you're willing to spend as much money as it would take to arm teachers and to train them, I have a better way. Just
we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to sort of relay an existential experience I had. I mentioned that I was bullied pretty intensely as a kid. I'm an attorney now, and one of those bullies walked into my law offices and was my client a few
wow.
years ago. It was a really strange thing, and and he actually asked me. I told him, "Oh, I know you. I remember you from the school down in Halfway Bay." And he said, "God, I hope I wasn't, you know, mean to you." I didn't tell him. I didn't want to. Sorry, I probably will do time in purgatory for the lies. But I did, you know, say. I did have this recollection, like, why couldn't we have been friends back then? Because I learned a little bit. He had kind of a rough situation at home and all of that. And so it would be nice if we could sort of find a way to be proactive about it. And he's a really nice guy. I mean,
right. And we can do that. And we know, educators, administrators, school resource officers, we know how to do that. We just need the support to be able to get mm-hmm. that done.
We probably just stirred up a whole lot of emotions for a lot of people out there in this conversation. So if there's anybody out there that, you know, that's wondering what's happening at their school, you know, call your principal, call your yeah. superintendent, and sit down and have a little chat with them. I mean, I know that, you know, we'd all be, you know, happy to hear from you, your perspective, and to share with you what we're doing in your schools. And I think that you'll all be you know, proud of your schools. And I think for us in school administration, that perhaps some of you have some ideas that would be good for us to listen to.
All right. Any other closing thoughts? We've got about a minute and a half left.
Let me, Tom, go ahead. Yeah, let me just say that even though I've talked about some things from an experiential and a law enforcement perspective in terms of you know, hardening the targets and things like that, mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that prevention is the answer to this. Education and prevention is what it's going to take to bring these things back under control, and I'm glad to hear the thoughts that have been expressed by the school people on this conversation. I think that's very important.
I would just say not only listen to the people who have been here speaking tonight, but listen to the kids because they know. They'll tell you.
And they are making their voices heard. Yes, I mean, that's why we're here tonight, actually. If it had just been another one of the things that just kind of died out in the media, we wouldn't be here tonight. Mm-hmm. We're here because teenagers have been active and in keeping this discussion alive, and it's why it'll continue for quite some time, hopefully. Yeah.
They've kept that conversation going, for sure.
All right. I want to thank Victoria Marr, Roger McDonald, Ginny Wozni, and Tom Parker for joining me tonight. Some of this was on short notice. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Jesse, for engineering. And, we'll continue this discussion. We may have one or all of you back at a certain point in time.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks to this evening's panelists and to producers Geraldine Goldberg and Katie Whiteside. Sandy McKnight wrote the theme music for tonight's program. The discussion will continue on Thursday Night Talk when we hand the microphone over to local students. Thank you for listening, and I wish you all a sweet night.